Bienvenidos a tu programa Naturaleza y Comunidad de la Pachamama. Hoy día tenemos un invitado especial. Él es un estudiante de PhD. Él va a hablar sobre las plantas y también vamos a hacer preguntas sobre Redwoods. Y él va a explicar en inglés y yo voy a tratar de explicar algunos puntos en español. Así que vamos a empezar hoy día. Su nombre es Ryan Stanfield y él está estudiando en la universidad allá en Canadá y queremos a preguntar algunas preguntas que nos gustaría saber sobre las plantas, cómo las plantas pueden, cómo funcionan las dinámicas, por ejemplo, cómo transmiten el agua desde las raíces a las hojas y todas esas preguntas. Today we have a special guest, Ryan Stanfield. Mm-hmm. Right? A doctorate student from the Department of...
Renewable Resources.
Okay. And of the University of Alberta in Canada. His research is specifically focusing how trees transport water and sugar through their system and is called the phloem.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So we will begin by discussing some general information about the redwoods in the North Coast in California, and then we will hear some background about your research and how it connects to the redwoods. What we need to understand is the importance of the phloem. So we will be asking, for example, tell us a little bit about yourself. And where are you from, and how did you become interested in biology?
Yeah, well, originally I'm from Southern California. I grew up in the Mojave Desert and the city of Victorville. I guess my journey of biology started at community college, a local two-year college in Victorville. I didn't know what I was going to do when I first started at university. Thought maybe psychology for a while, that interests me. But then I took this general biology course called The Biology of Organisms, and it was a survey throughout all levels of life, from the cell to the physiology, anatomy, and the ecology. And it really just clicked with me for some reason, and I did really well with it. And yeah, I just wanted to understand more about biological systems. And what also helped is having good professors, good teachers. Professor Dave Gibbs and Pamela McKay were both influential teachers and kind of conveying their passion for biology to the class, and that helped inspire me too. So
great. Yeah. Can you explain briefly your research, what it's about and why it's important?
Yeah. So I study a vascular system within the plants. Like, animals have vascular systems too. Like, we have our blood vascular system that disseminates our blood throughout our bodies to deliver the nutrients and oxygen that we need for our cells to become nourished. Well, plants have kind of analogous system, and the two parts of the system are called the xylem and the phloem. The xylem is for transporting water from the roots of the plant up to the leaves, and the phloem, usually it operates in the opposite direction, taking the sugars from the leaves and transporting them to where they're needed, such as the roots or fruits or flowers, or in the big redwood trees to the cones for reproduction.
Okay, so, yeah. How was your first experience with the redwoods here in California, and what made you interested to studying plants originally?
The redwoods have been really amazing. Yeah, it's kind of unbelievable that, you know, I've lived my life in California for so long, and now I'm just getting around to seeing the redwoods. It's such a big state with such an incredible amount of biodiversity. I've seen the other two big trees, or trees of significance, the giant sequoia trees, the most massive organism on the planet, and the oldest living trees, the bristlecone pines, and the White Mountains of California. So now I'm finally getting around to the tallest trees, the coastal redwoods. And, oh, it's just spectacular. Like, looking up into the canopy, I can't even see where the tops of them are. So it's just mind-blowing, the height of these trees. And it's really peaceful just walking through the redwood forest. It really brings a sense of calm and tranquility as I'm walking through. So just holistically, they're really amazing organisms just to be in the vicinity of, you know, and then there's the geeky nerdy side too. I'm like, well, how are water and sugars transported over such great distances? And especially the sugar part. Yeah, that's a huge open question, I think, for us plant biologists right now. Oh, and the second part of that question was, how did I get into plants?
Yeah, how do you interest in studying plants?
I guess back to that organismal biology class that I took, we looked at all kinds of different things. But I remember like looking at cross sections of onion root underneath the microscope, and they use all kinds of beautiful stains to highlight the different types of cells and just the geometric patterns, and it just looked like artwork to me. And I couldn't believe that this incredible thing was happening within all of the plants. You know, it's incredible architecture. And I just thought, wow, I have no idea what any of this stuff does or what it's for, but it would be great to study this in more detail. And if I do go into graduate studies, I think I'd like to study like the anatomy of plants and generally how they work. So, yeah, I think pretty early on, like, what the plant cell looked like, it really drew my eye. And, yeah, I really just got into it.
Great. Great. In general, how does the interconnected system of forests function with the air we breathe, the water we drink, and the food we eat? And what can this system teach us about human relationship?
Yeah, that's a really great question. The forests are critically important, like the air we breathe. Half of the air we breathe, or the oxygen that we breathe, comes from land plants. The other half comes from the ocean, from algae, microorganisms that do photosynthesis in the ocean. So that's really important. The forests help strengthen our soils to prevent the water from just flowing away to the ocean so quickly. It allows for the gradual percolation of water down into our underground reservoirs. It also, our forests, like of the Sierra Nevadas and the Rocky Mountains, are capturing a lot of the water and then transpiring the water out into the atmosphere to generate new rain clouds that then help precipitation in like the breadbasket of the United States and the prairies. The prairies get their water from all this water that's released from the trees of the Rockies. So it helps perpetuate the water cycle great distance. So this allows for us to maintain our civilization really far away from the coasts.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's so many things our forests do.
They
help clean our water too. And they're just beautiful. There's that holistic thing of it gives us a piece of tranquility and emotional calmness to be there in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important for psychological well-being.
How do you think redwood trees survived so many changes in Earth's environment over the millennia?
Yeah, they're very resilient. There's so many things that could happen over the course of a redwood tree's life. Living over 2,000 years, you know, there's fires that come and sweep through and burn away. Like as I was walking through the redwoods, like it seemed like half of some of these trees were just burned away. Like in the interior of the tree was just hollow. But yet when I look up at the canopy, the tree is still alive and living. Which it highlights like an amazing point of like the business end of the tree is like what's happening around the bark area, the bark and just underneath the bark. That's where the living cells are. And right in the center of the tree are a lot of dead cells that are just kind of there for structural support, but they're not functioning to like propagate water or sugars or nutrients throughout the organism. There's a resiliency of the individual. Like they're just slow growers and they're taking their time and They're developing a lot of strength and their root system. Their roots spread out. Instead of going really deep, they spread out really wide to get that strong supporting base. But then also I think there's resistance in just the ecosystem. Like there's so many of these tall trees around that it buffers against huge winds, or if there's a giant rainstorm, the group of trees galvanize together to help stabilize the local environment.
Great. Yeah. So how does photosynthesis occur in tallered trees like redwoods?
Yeah. Well, like in all plants, most of the photosynthesis would occur in the leaves. And just very basically, the process of photosynthesis is taking water and carbon dioxide and using the sun's energy to produce oxygen and sugar. Now, the challenge in redwood trees is that that key ingredient, water, has to be transported, you know, up to 100 meters high from the soil where the roots are all the way up to those leaves. And so this is, you know, a major engineering feat that the trees have accomplished, getting the water so high. And it actually doesn't use any energy. The plant doesn't use any energy to get that water up. It's all kind of sucked up through the atmosphere. The atmosphere pulls the water up from the roots all the way to the very tops of the tree. And like, that's just amazing. Like our human systems would require some pump or something that would be very energy intensive to send all that water up. So the architecture of these, the xylem vessels are just incredible to get that water up so high, you know, so it could be used for photosynthesis.
Yeah. Some of the challenge, maybe the gravity also.
Yeah, it has to counteract the force of gravity.
The environment also, too.
Yeah, if the air is dry, this puts more tension on the water column, and you could get things like air bubbles that form inside of the tree. And if air bubbles form, then the whole water system could collapse, and yeah, that could be problematic for the tree.
Sí, justamente nos está explicando sobre la fotosíntesis de los redwoods, cómo estos árboles hacen su fotosíntesis, y vamos a ver que hay esos dos argumentos que lo llamamos en español xilema y floema. Ellos se encargan de poder llevar los nutrientes, el agua a las plantas, y es increíble ver cómo los redwoods tienen más de 3,000 años de vida. Y también cuánto han crecido, y justamente nos está hablando sobre los retos de, por ejemplo, qué tan difícil es para que el agua pueda subir al tope de las puntas de los árboles, de las hojas, y a veces requiere eso más de 24 días. Justo estaba leyendo algunos artículos donde decía 24 días requiere para que el agua pueda subir, los nutrientes y todo eso. Es toda una dinámica, un conocimiento para aprender cómo es el sistema de estos árboles grandes, como las secoyas también. Can you explain the system of phloem that your research focuses on, and what is phloem? Perhaps many people doesn't understand that.
Yeah, so the phloem is, as I said earlier, one of the vascular systems of the plant that propagates the sugar around. And it's a tissue it's found right underneath the bark of the tree. It's a living tissue. And so what makes me cringe is when I walk out into the forest and people carve like their initials with a heart around it. Because what they're doing is they're actually digging into that critical living tissue. And like, you could kill a tree, like they call it girdling, if you cut a narrow band all the way around the circumference of a tree trunk, you'll actually kill it. And the reason why you kill it is because you've cut the phloem. It no longer has a way to transport those sugars from the leaves down to the roots. Then the root system dies and it can't take up any more water. Yeah. So the phloem tissue is, it's made up of a number of cells. And in particular, I study this pipeline called the sieve tube. And this is a continuous network of cells that goes all the way from the tiniest leaf all the way down to the root. At least we currently think it's interconnected. And there are different aspects of what I'm studying the phloem for, but a lot is not known about its basic architecture and also its cellular biology, like the different proteins and the way the membrane of the sieve tube is working to help support sugar transport. So one of the main things I've been researching is these tiny water channels that occur on the membrane of the sieve tube. Mm-hmm. And these water channels are called aquaporins. All living things have aquaporins, from fungi to animals, plants, bacteria. And one aquaporin water channel can help up to 1 billion water molecules per second enter or leave a cell. And so my research has documented these water channels occurring throughout the length of the sieve tube. And so I think the implication of this is that water helps pressurize this transport system. It helps push the sugar from the leaves down to the roots. It needs this water pressure to do it. So the water channels of the membrane are helping to facilitate this process. It helps the water rush in and send those sugars along. So that's probably the main aspect of my research. And so it's really tied to how the movement of water from the xylem is helping to, activate the phloem transport system.
Wow, interesting and very complex at the same time.
Yeah, it is pretty in depth.
Yeah. Which method that you're using to do your research?
I use a lot of microscopes.
Yeah.
I use a microscope, a confocal microscope, and I've used scanning electron microscopes to look at the architecture of the plant, of the phloem tissue. And I use molecular biology techniques so I could tag these proteins I'm looking for. And they fluoresce, they glow underneath the microscope so I could see where they're located.
Wow. Great. So the other question is, do scientists expect more droughts and desertification in the future? Maybe, do you think? I don't know.
I'm not a climate scientist, but I have read some articles that definitely show a trend towards the climate getting drier and hotter all around the world. So that will definitely affect plant life. That directly affects the vascular system of the plant.
Yeah, and also how does your research help us learn about drought resistance? Maybe can you explain that?
Yeah. So, if the plant is experiencing some drought stress, first that's going to put a stress on the xylem, the water transport system of the plant. And if little air bubbles get in there, then the plant's going to start to lose its ability to send the water up the plant. And then that, in turn, becomes a problem for the phloem, because without water, the phloem can't transport its sugars anywhere. So the plant has some adaptations to respond to this. It could grow stronger xylem to resist the air bubbles. And we're thinking that maybe the phloem has some control over how much water it's taking and receiving from the xylem. So maybe in some drought conditions, it could be a little bit more conservative and save some of its water so the transport system doesn't fail under stress. So my research is very fundamental, but it does have downstream consequences, for our crop plants and for understanding how trees die in the face of a drying climate.
Yeah. Bueno, es interesante escuchar cómo las plantas tienen una resistencia, así como los seres humanos también, en nuestra sociedad siempre tenemos la resistencia indígena, podemos relacionarlo. Tantas resistencias que aquí nosotros tenemos en nuestra sociedad, también las plantas los tienen. Él está explicando justamente todo un sistema, un proceso biológico de las plantas. Y la otra pregunta que quiero hacer es importante, yo pienso, es que ¿cómo hacemos que las ciencias duras, así como él está explicando, las biológicas, las físicas, puedan ser más accesibles a la gente, que la gente pueda entender fácilmente? Porque es complicado a veces para alguien que no ha estudiado ese campo. Es complicado entender todo este sistema. Entonces voy a preguntar eso y después voy a tratar de explicarlos en español. So my other question, it was, how can we relate quantitative data and knowledge from the hard sciences, mm-hmm. with qualitative data from the social sciences to explain the importances and value of certain function of nature, in this case, the forests and trees?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think there's some an important role that the social sciences can play in helping to disseminate the information of the hard sciences. So like what we're doing now is like a really important thing, because I think the general public maybe doesn't understand like all the facets of science. And I sense that overall there's a growing distrust of the hard scientists. And so the social scientists can help ease that, this barrier, this knowledge barrier between the scientists and the general public. So that's the first thing that I thought of when hearing your question. And yeah, in terms of the qualitative and quantitative aspects, you know, actually in biology, there's a lot of qualitative aspects of our research. Like the first chapter of my PhD was mostly qualitative, where I'm just taking images mm-hmm. and I'm just documenting something that hasn't been documented before. And in science, we call this discovery science. So I think there's some overlap there between the hard sciences and the social sciences, especially in biology. There's a lot of systems and structures that just haven't even been documented. And so the qualitative data is used as a baseline to help us generate hypotheses mm-hmm. that then we could test using quantitative data.
Yeah, I was just explaining in Spanish how can we, you know, from the perspective of hard science, can be more accessible to people, can you, like a general public, can understand. Mm-hmm. And it's very complicated, but as you say, maybe social science can help that, you know, to be like generally public doesn't understand, you know, those very, very scientific words. And I feel like all the debate about science and the hard science is just here, but it's not accessible to the people. It's like a very hierarchical way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you say like it, social science maybe can help that to be more contact with people and can understand.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah.
What was the last part of that question? It was about relating it to trees?
In this case, the forest and trees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting too. Like, I guess maybe scientists have a hard time relating the information into a big picture. So maybe if we understand more about how the trees work, we could relate them in our own personal lives more.
Exactly, yeah.
And then we'll have an incentive to protect these organisms more. Like mm-hmm. it's incredible to me, like a lot of people maybe don't even understand that a plant is alive. Yeah, so just even like bridging that gap that, oh, like these trees are living entities. They breathe just like us and mm-hmm. they have all these processes going on. They're very complex living organisms. And the more that we understand about them, the more we could start creating analogies between how we live and how the trees live and how they deal with stress and how they deal with disturbance in the environment. And they could be our teachers and how we live our own lives. They're such long-lived organisms. They must be doing something right.
Yeah, that is true. This is very general question. Like, for example, I feel like how indigenous knowledge influence in the, for example, in your field. Mm-hmm. Can you tell a little bit? Like, you know, what do you think?
Oh, that's a good question. I wish we knew more about how indigenous people viewed things like trees. They perhaps had some intuitive knowledge that even scientists now don't really understand about how plants function. Yeah, I think the most important aspect of indigenous knowledge is how they give a name to everything in their environment. I'm not an expert on indigenous knowledge, but what I kind of understand is like everything in the environment has a very specific name, and it's told in their stories, and it's passed through generations. And so things become sacred through the telling of names. And in science, we have the same thing, kind of. Like, we give a name to everything out there, a scientific name for most of the organisms, like some have yet to be described. But the problem is it's very enshrined in science, and it's not really in the common tongue. Common people don't notice all the different types of trees and plants. There's like this disconnect. So I think if we're able, and I have no idea, this is many, many PhDs, many interdisciplinary researchers, scientists and social scientists getting together, how can we make the natural world more relatable to people that, you know, maybe are really disconnected from the natural world, living in cities and haven't really had a lot of experience, you know, getting to hike through the redwoods. And I think that will go a long way in helping to preserve our natural environment. Mm-hmm. If we could make a connection with these awesome living things, then we could cherish them and help protect them. And then we'll live in a much better world.
Exactly. I think the same, like, you know, everything is interconnected and, you know, we can learn from different science, like indigenous knowledge, like social science. Working together, we can have better results or better understanding about our nature. So my final question, I guess, is what is your recommendation for future research in your field?
More funding from the NSF. I think all researchers could use more funding. Like, it's already really tight in the hard sciences, and I know it's even tighter in the social sciences and the arts. So yeah, we need all the funding that we can get, because this fundamental science, it seems pretty out there, but it has downstream implications and how we're preserving our forests and how our crops grow and things like that. And it's just really interesting. But I'd like to see more work in phloem, you know, overall. Like, you know, the hypothesis for how the phloem works was generated over 85 years ago by a German plant physiologist named Ernest Munch. And since that time, the hypothesis still hasn't been completely validated.
Wow.
And this is like a fundamental, like, plant process. It would be like, oh, we don't understand how our cardiovascular system works. And yet we rely so heavily on plants for, you know, all kinds of things. And so that really boggles my mind that so little attention has been placed on this fundamental vascular system of plants. So, yeah, I just encourage, like, people that are interested in plant biology, you know, take a look at the phloem and, you know, get creative and, yeah, help us figure out how this system works.
Yeah, if we connect with people, with nature, you know, all together. Bueno, voy a tratar de poder hablar un poco en español para que el público en español pueda entender. Bueno, aquí él nos ha hablado sobre las plantas, cómo funciona. Pero también nos está hablando algunos de los retos, como por ejemplo para los que estudian biología. Los retos son, bueno, no hay mucha importancia también en el público. Yo pienso que es eso también porque estas ciencias son bien específicas y no son accesibles también a la gente. Y eso es lo que yo estaba siempre hablando, de cómo hacemos que las ciencias duras sean también, ¿no?, más accesibles a la gente y que puedan también tomar un poco de las ciencias blandas, que lo llamamos. Las ciencias blandas y las ciencias duras pueden trabajar juntos y nosotros podemos entender mejor y de alguna manera y así la gente puede estar más informada y más relacionada con su propia naturaleza y su entorno. Bueno, si quieren saber sobre xilema y floema, pueden un poquito buscar en el internet, les va a dar una definición exacta, pero justamente Ryan estaba enfocado a su estudio en el floema, ¿no? Cómo funciona eso, y hemos entendido que es un proceso largo, es todo un sistema, por ejemplo, en los árboles grandes como que tenemos aquí el Redwoods, toma bastante tiempo para que haga esa función. Y también la fotosíntesis que estaba hablando, que cuando un árbol tiene más plantas, toma más fotosíntesis y es por eso también crece más rápido. En términos generales estoy tratando de poder explicarles a ustedes, pero bueno, vamos a saludarles. Espero que puedan venir más científicos aquí a la radio para que nos explique un poco más y nosotros podamos entender más sobre las plantas, sobre nuestra naturaleza. Y también la otra pregunta que hice es sobre el conocimiento indígena, ¿no? El conocimiento indígena, no hemos tenido ningunos instrumentos, tecnología al tiempo, pero nosotros hemos conocido las plantas, como él lo decía, como Ryan lo decía, sobre nombres, ¿no? Hemos pasado por generaciones reconociendo estas plantas y hemos encontrado tantas medicinas en esas plantas y que hasta ahora ha servido a estos campos de estudios como la biología y otras ciencias naturales, el conocimiento indígena. Y entonces valorarlo eso como una ciencia creo que es importante también. Thank you so much for coming to the radio, Ryan. Yeah. I hope so you can come in the future when you finish your PhD.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, I think the radio is important because we try to bring scientists or researchers, mm-hmm. They can explain or share the research with the public. I think that's important here in our community. So thank you so much. Thank you, Jessica, for helping us.
Thank you.
Yeah. So see you next week. Nos vemos la próxima semana. Hasta luego.